check pin number 1561 of the series that began in September of 1982, 31 and a half years ago. I'll be curious as to why my signal is noisy tonight. See if I can find out why. Okay. The main purpose of the TechNet, as you guys already know from lots of times hearing it, is education. The curious people who want to know more about radio gather at this time and help each other. Radio is not an easy thing to understand because the books do a mediocre job. The schools teaching wireless technology do a less than mediocre job, in my opinion, as far as teaching useful engineering information that you can really use. Curriculum that was done a long time ago and they haven't updated it ever since. The way a person signs in because he does have a question or a comment for the net is to give us your call letters, your name. Try to remember to give me your name. Makes things a little bit more personal. And then the word yes means you do have a question or a comment for the net. A typical sign-in might sound like this, KC2RFN, Alan, and yes. The schedule that we have is a fairly loose one, which during the first hour or so, we take general questions. After that, that's followed by Paul WS2N giving us a space report as to what the latest that National Aeronautics and Space Administration is doing. In between those two is John KC2RFN, the man who monitors the mailbag. Let me drop it. And John also monitors the Echo Link channel. So if you have trouble signing in by way of Echo Link because you don't give a big enough space, you can send a message to John KC2RFN, KC2WGB, to that effect. And that we know about it, and therefore people don't get locked out. Okay, do we have a check-in at this time? Give me your call letter's name right now, K2LIW.
KC2MDD, Steve, and yes.
Beach Warmer White, Joe, yes. Okay, we've got Steve and Joe. Anyone else to sign in, unless you do have a question or a comment for the net, give me a call letter's name right now, K2LIW.
WS2N, Paul, with a space report tonight. Back to you, Jim.
And will that be space report number 154 of the series, Paul?
Yes, it is. I'm up to number 154 on the computer here, yes. Back to you, Dick.
That's 154 space reports since he started numbering them. And he had been giving space reports for a considerable long period of time before that. Okay, one last call. Anyone else with questions or comments for the TechNet? Give me your call letters and name right now. K2RAW listening. Okay, that being done, we got more than enough to start off tonight, Steve. KC2MDB, what would you like to talk about? We'll discuss anything except antenna, Steve. I'm having some fun with it. K2RAW, go ahead, Steve.
Very good, Dick. Greetings to you and greetings to everyone on the net. Now, I'm good with antennas so far. Maybe next week. I'm furthering my DMR endeavor here. And I'll throw this question out to the net. Is there a simple way to download the user list? And question number two is, I got my radio partially programmed, and it's a forever. How do you get the user's call signs to come up? All I get is their ID numbers. That's something I have to program into the software. Back to you, Dick.
Good comment on that, Dick.
Sounds like you've already been down that road a little bit, John. Go right ahead.
Good evening, Dick. Yes, the call sign of the number that's coming in has to be inserted by you. Now, eventually, when you download a new list and those numbers are in there, they will be in there. But you have to assign those programs as you, those call signs as you program them in. That's what I know up to now. That's the way it's been. And that's the only thing I know about it. Back to you, Dick.
You might need some more fills on that, Steve. Go right ahead, Steve.
Okay, Dick, very good. Yeah, the one portable radio I have does have listed, and basically what I'm trying to do is I got a mobile, and I finally got the thing to program, and I'm trying to just basically take the information and transfer it, you know, basically copy it manually, you know, frequencies, user numbers, everything like that, into the mobile radio software. I mean, I got the thing to work, and he mentions that you can download a list. Where would I go to download that? Back to you.
Quick, that would be back to Bernie again, like last week. I don't know if KQIO is around.
Yeah, let's give a call for Bernie. K2 Yankee Oscar. Too bad we can't get him at the beginning of each net, because it looks like DMR questions are going to be forever. Bernie, are you available? K2LAW. Okay, do we have another DMR person acquainted with DMR? Anyone else around that would like to give us further information? Please give me a call. That is right now. I'm being quite naive about DMR so far, Steve, such that you've gone pretty far down that road. What radio did you buy? How did you select the DMR radio? What it cost you? And what's your major motivation for pursuing DMR? Yes, it's the newest and latest and the greatest, but compared to some of the other kinds of two-meter analog radio, it's a little bit more pricey. So what do you intend to get in return for your investment? Tell me any of the above, Steve.
Dick, quick point before you go there.
Go ahead, John.
WGV. I see we have Barry on Echo Link and Twin B. I know he's down south, but evidently he's listening. Barry might have some information on that. I know he talks to Rich a lot, who has had DMR and the other type, D-Star. So put a call out to Barry. Maybe he can help us.
Okay, we're going to call Barry, M2MB, who I think is down in the Carolinas. I hope Barry is not in Charleston, South Carolina right now, because that's kind of a hot spot. And I sent you some information about the Laplace calculation for aneurysm-type situations or inflating tires. So tell us what you know about DMR, because I think you've gone pretty far down that road, Barry. And two moon bounce by Echo Link, K2LIW, the Technic.
Okay, I think I got it. First of all, hello everybody. And yes, I am down south again. I expect to be here for a couple more weeks. Hope this stupid thing sounds okay. I don't know why, but every time I use that LimeLock, I sound too loud. So on other features, I sound fine. Whatever. Anyhow, I am not an expert at DMR. I have no equipment, and Richie N2EO, I think, is getting on. I personally have nothing more than just a casual interest in it. I doubt very much I'll ever get on it, actually. So I wish I could be of more help to you guys. I'm really not. Sorry about that, but, you know. I think we'll all be experts soon, though. I think within the next year, everybody will know everything about DMR. I personally prefer some of the other modes. DMR, I was on it a couple of years ago when it first started up. I did have some DMR equipment, and I used it, and it sounded to me very restricted audio. I didn't like it. I understand that that's an algorithm that they cannot change, so that's unfortunate, because it's going to sound that way, I guess, all the time. I've been told that some of the other modes, D-Star, for instance, is a bit clearer. I hope they're right. I am presently getting on to D-Star. By the time I get home, I should be on D-Star. Anyway, back to Net Control, and good evening from South Carolina. K2RW and the Net, and 2MB.
Looks like I guessed correct. He is in South Carolina. Your audio is just right, Barry. Not too loud, not too soft. You got it just right. Lightly bassy, but sounds good. And thank you for that information. What motivated you, Barry, to try DMR when you did? I presume had a radio with that capability, and I'm amazed that I don't think there was a repeater around that you could use at the time. So was it DMR radio to DMR radio that you were trying? I think you said you haven't used it yet, but I don't think there were any repeaters around with that capability. I also have the impression that what DMR really is a Motorola's digitized audio, which I think is called Moto Turbo, Turbo or something like that. And although it's secure, the method by which it resynthesizes speech that has been digitized, I hear tell a fair number of people are unhappy with it. It's not exactly high fidelity. So what motivated you to go as far as you did so far, Barry? Into Moonbounce from South Carolina, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, it's working. Because there is another repeater in Queens, believe it or not, which is operating on DMR. It was called Moto Turbo at the time. I know they since changed the name.
Same system.
That would be Howie, WV2HWW, is connected to a repeater which operates, it's not his repeater, but it's the same site in northern Queens. And that's the reason why I got on it at that time, because a few people, including my friend Richie, were getting on. So I decided I would give it a try. But as I say, I didn't see any particular reason why I'd want to stay on it. My interests, as everybody knows, are a little bit different. I'm looking at things like Moonbounce and long-haul Tropo, you know, another part of 2 meters and 440. But, you know, sideband and things like that. And that's really where my interest seems to go back to all the time. In fact, when I get home, I expect to expand on that quite a bit. But the Moto Turbo thing, as I say, was a bit of a disappointment, and because of the way it sounds, mainly. And as I said, I didn't really think I needed another repeater. But there was one, and there still is. So now New York City has 2 repeaters that operate on that mode, possibly 3, but I haven't been keeping track. But that was several years ago already that we got the first one, RW and 2MB.
With a vanity call of N2 Moon Bounce, you can tell that when Barry chose those call letters to the B2LIT was a no. I've forgotten your previous call letters. Anyhow, Barry was into Moon Bounce, gee, an awful long time ago, 30 or so years ago, on primarily 2 meters and 440, and he's getting back into it. I know that Barry has recently acquired a medium high power 2 meter amplifier. He's about to acquire a more than kilowatt capable 440 amplifier. So Barry's going to be back on Moonbounce, and those call letters are going to have more meaning. So that's a mode that really separates the men from the boys. I'm guessing there's around 1,500 guys on ham radio worldwide that have used Moonbounce. Moto Turbo and Moonbounce, I don't think, is a compatible combination, although some of the weak signal choke tail and WSJT techniques, K1JT, the inventor of those, they do, I think, have Moonbounce capability. So, kind of curious, what is your future requirement for DMR, Steve? Got into it because it's the latest and the greatest, and you want to be part of the leading edge of guys that are experimenting with it. Is a guess on my part. KC2MDP, K2RIW, go ahead, Steve.
Okay, the reason I got into it, it's a radio. What can I tell you? Anything with a radio, I figured I'd give it a try. I've seen the little HG at the Lime Rock Ham Fest, and the price wasn't all that bad. It was like $270, $280. And it was already programmed, so basically take it out of the box, charge the battery up a little bit, it worked. So I figured, hey, you know, I'll try putting mobile in my car. So it's a learning curve, you know, anything to learn, anything to, you know, excite the mind, I guess, and radio does that to me. Computers, not so much. I got it. It's a High Terra. I got it on eBay, and I think I paid $330 for it. The guy was kind enough to include the software. He also downloaded the driver and everything else for me, which took a bit of doing to get it to work in the computer because it doesn't like a 64-bit computer. It only wants on 32. Fortunately, I resurrected one of those, and I'm pulling my hair out a little bit with it, but I'm still learning, so what the heck, you know? The price is right, and gives me something to do. Back to you.
Steve, you being a LimeLock member from way back, probably keep your ear pretty close to the ground with reference to what the LimeLock community is doing. From what you know right now, how many people are going to be fairly seriously pursuing a DMR? How many have done it so far? If you happen to know what's LimeLock's record up till now, tell us from your point of view what you know along those lines, Steve. KC2MDP, K2LAW.
Yeah, to be quite honest with you, Dick, the short time I've had it, which is only 2 weeks, and the amount of listening time, I was on basically LimeLock Local, which is basically like the local repeater. You know, they have worldwide. You can go into Asia, you can go into like North America, almost like an Echo Link type thing. Basically, I was on the local, and I probably heard about, maybe 40, 50 different call signs. I'm sure there's probably a lot more guys that belong to LimeLock than that on it. Back to you.
Okay, thank you for that information, Steve. Anyone else within the sound of my voice that have any further questions for Steve? On the subject of DMR, for instance, give me a call there right now. K2RIW the Tech Net.
B1HQJ. Have a quick question for you of a technical nature.
Okay, I didn't hear all of the call letters. I didn't hear the prefix. I heard something 1HQJ. If your question is on the subject of DMR, we'll take it immediately. If your technical question is on a different subject, there's one person ahead of you that's already on the list, Joe. So, blank HQJ, please give me your prefix and your name, and just tell us the name of the subject you want to discuss. HQJ, K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Very good, Dick. This is Tim, Tango India Mike. KB1HQJ is the call. I wanted to just quickly ask about AMBE plus 2, which is a vocoder from DVSI. That is the newest generation of vocoder that's being used by DMR, where D-Star was using the AMBE plus. The DMR is using AMBE plus 2, which is said to be better quality. DMR, you know, does not specify a specific vocoder technology, but the AMBE plus 2 is the vocoder that manufacturers have adopted for DMR, if that makes any sense. So, what are the differences in the AMBE plus versus the AMBE plus 2, which is used in DMR? DMR. So that would be my question.
Okay, we got a little bit beautifully here, Tim. KB1HQJ. If you happen to know the answer to any of that, Steve, tell us what you know. KC2MDP, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Unfortunately not, Dick. I'm kind of new to it myself, and basically, like I said, it's a learning curve, and I'm basically emulating one program for the one radio and trying to make it work in the other one. As I learn, though, I'll try and answer any questions anybody has. I'll give you my trials and tribulations of what worked and what didn't work for me. So that's about all I can tell you, Dick. Back to you.
Okay, we got you, Steve. Let's see if Barry has any information on this. And two moon routes. Barry, have you gotten any familiarity with the ANBE plus 2 versus ANBE plus. Wonder if you've heard those words before, and if it rings any bells with you, Mary. See if it rings any bells in South Carolina. In two moon bouts on Echolink, K2RAW in the TechNet.
Well, not really too familiar with it, but I do know that the Moto Turbo version and the D-Star are a little different, and the D-Star actually sounds better. And that's about as much as I know about it. I know that D-Star uses something where you have two streams at the same time or something, and that actually, everybody thought that that was going to be a big advantage, but that's part of the reason why the audio is somewhat restricted. So I think it went the wrong way, but that, you know, as much as I really don't know much about it because I really haven't studied it. My last experience with it was probably 4 years ago, and I really haven't really thought about it or gone back to it much since then. Over.
Hi, thank you, Barry. Already.
A quick comment, Dick.
Let's see what John knows about this. You got it, John.
2WGB, yes, very little. However, Glenn made a purchase last week, a Motorola, and he has read extensively on the Moto Turbo versus the DMR, and he may have that information. So put a call out to him, see if he's around. He might be able to fill you in on some of that information you're looking for.
Thank you for a quick comment, Dick.
Okay, I think I heard HQJ or something like that. Correct me, sir. Give me your phone call and name, and then proceed.
Yeah, there might be a slight delay. It's KB1HQJ. That was the call. Yeah, I disagree that the DMR doesn't sound as good as D-Star. I think it's subjective. The ANBE Plus that's used in D-Star is supposed to be an older generation of the ANBE Plus 2, which is being used in DMR. I think the DMR sounds good when you have the right equipment in place. I've heard some DMR radios where the person sounds like they're right next to you. And then I've heard some that aren't so good. But I disagree with Barry when he says that that it sounds better on D-Star. It could be that he's listening to listening to the signal on a better quality audio speaker or something on the D-Star. But it's all subjective anyway. But the DMR that I've been hearing, it sounds really, really great. But my question specifically about the ANBE Plus used in D-Star versus the ANBE Plus 2, which is used in DMR. What is it that is different? And that was the question. Okay, thanks very much. KB1HQJ, I'll be clear and listening.
Just for the quick answers.
Okay, we got a triple that time. Hal was one of them. Let's see what Hal's got to say. K6 Delta Papa Zulu, K2RAW, right now.
K2RAW,
Delta
K6TVC. I don't want to say too much about the DMR, but I am here for any other quickie answers, so I just checked in a little late. I don't have too much use for this unless it was spread spectrum. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, Hal. Who is the other person that wanted to give us some information? Please give us your call letters and name. K2RIW and the TechNet.
Okay, to the day.
Okay. Eric, tell us everything you know about DMR. And, ANBE Plus and ANBE Plus 2 and so on, and clearness of audio. Those are the kind of questions we're getting tonight, Eric. KE2BJ, K2RIW, the TechNet.
No, Vic, I caught the very tail end of that. Specifically, what did he want to know?
Okay, some of the subjects that have been discussed so far tonight is that Barry has had some experience. Barry, this N2FB, has had some experience with DMR, and from his experience, the audio sounds not so pleasant. Tim, KB1HQJ, thinks that some versions of Moto Turbo or DMR has some very good sounding audio. Tim is also asking the question, what is the difference between the two different protocols, the ANBE Plus, which apparently is the vocoder used on DMR, versus the ANBE Plus 2 that's used on D-Star, or vice versa. So there's a difference there. We're trying to figure out what that difference is. From your experience, the DMR, when used correctly, have pleasant sounding audio. And tell us anything else you know about DMR, because many of us are fairly new to it right now. KE2EJ, K2RIW to be in the deck net.
All right, Steve. K2RIW, K2EJ. Let's start off straightening out a couple things. All right. ANBE Plus is a codec. They call it a vocoder in this. Multimedia world, we actually call it a codec. It's a particular method in which to carry data. In ANBE Plus 2, or ANBE 2, is a later version of the codec. The particular codec, or the vocoder that we're talking about, works by deconstructing audio, breaking it up into bands of frequency, and actually trying to identify what the phonemes are and what they do to reduce the amount of data that it takes to actually pass audio is they delete things that you don't need or what they consider to be you don't need. So that's why audio sometimes has a little bit of a funny sound to it. Actually, in terms of quality, the least quality is AMBE, AMBE Plus. The better quality is AMBE Plus 2, but there is something else that goes with that. I'm going to explain it in a second. Just let me have a drop this. Depending upon which method of transmission you want to use now, there's something called DMR, there's something called P25, there's something called Tetra, and there's actually a couple of others. And they all use the same vocoder. They all use the same codec, except for D-Star, which uses an earlier version of it. And don't forget that the codecs that we're talking about now are over 10 years old, so as you well know, time marches on, progress goes, and codecs get better. That's why in the video land world, we can put Ultra HD on a DVD, or even send it over the internet. That's another story. Okay, so, the big difference between, let's say, P25 and DMR is that the DMR, or P25, is designed for the commercial world. And as you all know, the commercial world has gone from plus or minus 5 kHz deviation to plus or minus 2.5 kHz deviation. So, what is someone to do? Either they reduce the analog by that much, or we go to a digital mode that utilizes the same bandwidth. Okay, now we have a bandwidth that is actually 12.5 kHz wide in terms of channel spacing, and the deviation is going to be plus or minus 2.5 kHz. So there's a whole bunch of things we can do with that. Let me let it drop. One of the first things that we can think about is, alright, we're going to put some digital audio in this channel space that we have. And if we're going to do, say, a single voice channel, like the Yaesu Fusion system, which, by the way, also uses the exact same codec, or the exact same vocoder, as in DMR, which is AMB-22, but the difference is, and let me tell you, it's a big difference. The Yaesu, when operated in what they call wide voice, uses the entire 12 kHz, actually, in that case, you use 25, but it's actually 12.5. You get a much better result in terms of audio quality than you do with DMR, and for this reason. DMR decided in the commercial world that they were going to have two voice channels in that same 12 and a half kilohertz worth of channel statement. So, something's got to give. Let's stop again. And the thing that it's going to give is you've now cut the bandwidth in half that you can use to catch your audio with. Right? Even though it's GDMA, and there's a lot of ways that you can finagle stuff, and we can get into that later. But the difference between the DMR two voice channels and say P25 or Yaesu Fusion is that we only have a single voice channel. So what that actually means is with the Yaesu and the P25, I've got 96 kilobits worth of data that I can pass in that channel. And if I use 96 kilobits for 9600 baud, for you people that like baud, I can send a lot of voice data. DMR, I can only send 6.5 kilobits worth of channel spacing bandwidth, and the best data rate that I'm going to get for my audio is going to be around 4800 kilobaud or 4800 baud. Actually, it's a little different depending upon whether you pack it with data and stuff like that, but the reason for the difference in voice quality is that you've only got half the bandwidth, and you got to do a heck of a lot more compression in order to get all the stuff that you need in there to create intelligent audio. That's the place that I want to start, so let's see what other folks have to say. K2RIW, K2CAN.
Thank you, Eric. A lot of good information in there. My first question is this. If the new commercial radios by FCC mandate are now being restricted to plus or minus 2.5 kc of deviation as opposed to the plus or minus 5 kc that was popular before, and if I'm digitizing audio and I'm sending it as bits, I've only got 2.5 kc of deviation, which implies a total of 5 kc of channel occupation by that signal because of the way the Fourier series and Fourier transform works. If I was transmitting 2,000 bits per second, I would have a significant side lobe plus 2 kc and minus 2 kc from the carrier. If I'm using a narrowband FM is what this is. So to try to force good clean audio, which has to be digitized with a lot more bits than that, I'm guessing that all kinds of crazy compression has to take place to take digitized audio with reasonable fidelity and try to fit it into plus or minus 2.5 kc of deviation. Am I wrong on that one, Eric, or have some of these compression techniques have gotten that sophisticated that they can suppress side lobes that are further away from the carrier? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the TechNet.
K2IW, K2J. Well, okay, if we really want to get into it, I can actually tell you that the way DMR and P25 is organized, first of all, you may think of it as FM, but don't think of it as FM. It's actually for FSK, or FSK, that's what they call G4FM. And what we do is we create symbols, and we add FEC to it. And we do a whole bunch of other things, is the TV, and there's a few other things. But let me get to the audio codec. A good sounding audio that you're used to hearing hi-fi samples is either 44.1 samples, 1,000 samples per second, or 48,000 samples per second. Now, we can't stuff all 48,000 samples per second in this room today, so we got to do some magic. What we got to do is a combination of bandwidth limiting in terms of breaking up speech into the phonem parts or the vocal cord parts, getting that information, and getting to the sibilant parts of speech, which is a very high end. And there's an awful lot of space in the middle that's basically unused in human speech. So we consider to be human speech in our FM land something that runs 300 hertz and 3 kilohertz. Well, these codecs don't do a continuous Fourier series of the entire bandwidth. A lot of DCT on it, or even if you were to take and look at the total amount of energy on a spectrum analyzer or a spectrogram actually of voice, you'll find the areas of high energy and lots of it, the areas
repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Because of the timeout, we lost the last approximately 60 seconds, Eric. So if you could repeat the last 60 seconds, that would be helpful. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Did I get to the part where I was talking about deformance and speech?
And just about the place where you started, where the dropout occurred.
Okay, again, so if you take a spectrograph or say a spectrum analyzer picture of speech from a human voice, you'll find out that there's areas of high energy, areas of no energy, and more areas of energy that are important to bringing intelligibility to speech. You have the sound made by the vocal cords. You have the resonant cavity of your nasal passage and the back of your throat, which makes the deformant sounds of speech, and your teeth and the air blowing and your tongue make sibilant sounds of speech. In between those and noise is basically the rate. We remove that, which means that we don't have to send any bits to transmit that information. And that's how we reduce it. There's actually more that goes to it. There's actually a lot of math in terms of turning it into a series of DCTs, creating coefficients that actually represent deformant, breaking it up into different bands, and then reconstructing the whole thing. Actually, Ray Dolby did that many, many, many years ago. That became the basic principle of how Dolby, Dolby work. Minus the separation of the deformant and minus the removed information, whereas with Dolby, he wanted to keep all of it and keep the noise out of it. So that's why he broke it up into little bits. So he took a series of bands between 50 and 150 hertz, between 150 hertz and 300 hertz, and so on and so forth, and literally reorganized the way those bands of energy were, and raised, because of the recording medium of that day, the concept of breaking it up into little bits and doing compensation for whatever the medium is, was the basis of all the different forms of Dolby, which also became the basis of how to figure out and how to do noise reduction.
Repeater. Timeout. Repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
Oh, I blew it up again. Where'd you lose me? Was it somebody step on me?
We lost only about 15 seconds at the end. Let me jump to the bottom line here, Eric, and that is the controversy we're hearing today about DMR is that some people think that the DMR process is capable of good sounding audio. Others believe that as currently configured, it's got pretty yucky sounding audio, similar to what Moto Turbo used to sound like. Of the DMR repeater that you have recently established in the Long Island area, if a person is using the right radio, the right software, the right ANDE plus 2 or whatever, will the DMR, as it's about to be established, the Google IMOC repeater, will it have the capability of transmitting audio that'll please most people? What do you think on that one, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
I've got to sort of step back from this a second, because you know my hearing has been bad, and I have difficulty with some of the things. There's a couple things going on. A lot of people are listening to DMR on these little HPs, which actually, some of them make a real nice blast of audio, but they also make a nice blast of distortion in the process. DMR done properly, with the correct input level. Now, there's something about DMR and ABNA codecs that requires a very narrow input range of what the correct levels are so it can actually accurately take it apart so that we put back together again. If everybody does everything right and you're not listening to it on a little handy talkie, you're listening to it, say, like a mobile radio or a deep speaker, you can actually, most people will be fairly pleased with it. It does have artifacts. Some of the artifacts come from multipath, some of the artifacts come from things dropping off the edge of the earth, just as much as the artifacts in analog FM. K2RW, K2J.
BJ to be with Thomas. Okay, I think I'm hearing Joe, WJ2B. Go right ahead, sir.
Everybody,
WIT, MD380 DMR HT, which is a fairly inexpensive entry into the DMR range of HTs out there. And I've been playing with it for the last few days and went on to different repeaters. I was in the Queens Nassau County area today, went on a couple of repeaters out there in the city, Queens. I've been on the BNB in Selden, the Glymark, of course, and I would say for an inexpensive HT, the audio is very, very pleasing, and the only time I notice artifacts is when people get on the edge of the coverage area. As the signal starts to fade, the artifacts get worse and worse as the signal gets very weak, down in the minus 110 to 120 area on the monitors that are on the internet. So when you have a strong signal, it's very, very clear audio, very nice audio, and that's on an inexpensive HD. So the more expensive Motorola's and the more expensive mobile rig should probably sound better, I would imagine. But I've
been using DMR for how long? What's your major motivation? Because it's the latest and the greatest, you want to be there with everyone else, or do you have specific needs for talk to people in other areas of the country? What's driving you toward DMR, Joe? WJ2B, THRIW in the TechNet.
I would say my motivation was just something new and interesting, and it seemed like everybody was jumping on the bandwagon, so I wanted to see something new in ham radio. I haven't experienced any digital modes in ham radio other than the computer type PSK31, but that's mostly text-based, not audio-based. But I have heard, you know, digital transmissions over HF that radio Mondial and that kind of stuff, but I've never actually played with a type of digital mode to actually talk on. So I was interested to learn how it works and see how it sounds and what kind of, I know it was related to cell phones, which I thought was interesting back when they switched from analog to digital cell phones. This kind of reminds me of the first digital cell phones when the coverage was not that good on the cell towers, and you would get out in the fringe areas of the coverage on the tower, and you start to get artifacts and breaking up. This is very, very similar. When you get out, somebody's out in the coverage area of the repeater, you get the same kind of artifacts that you did back when the cell phone's coverage was not very good on the towers back in the digital days. Back over you, WJ2B.
I thank you, Joe.
Talk
good information. So are the people listening right now, are there any further questions or comments on the subject of DMR, DMR audio, digital encoding techniques, artifacts, whatever? If you have any further questions or comments on DMR, give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
CB1 HQJ. Dick, I just want to get out here. So, get away from our planet. And thank you, Dick, for putting the question out there. I do appreciate it. Always enjoy the TechNet. 73. It's KB1HQJ. Clear.
Okay, we heard Tim. There was another person in there, or who was the other person?
Oh, it was me. I was just throwing something in there.
Go right ahead and throw something in there, Eric.
Yeah, one thing that the folks down here haven't really experienced yet is as you move up to New England, or even as you head towards upstate, where there are mountains. Multi-class then starts to play a big role. We don't experience down here, so you can be well within the, you know, within the expected range of who's here. And the multi-class really does create really strange artifacts. You think you're more off the cliff, but that's not what's happening.
Okay, that sounds good. So by technical decree, Eric has declared that down here on Long Island we have very little multi-class compared to the people up in New England in the mountains. I'm having some fun with Eric. One of the things that I often talk about with radio that we often forget about is that you may have your transmitter on one mountain and your receiver on the other mountain a couple of miles away, and you assume there's nothing in between the two but the direct path. But Mother Nature's radio doesn't behave that way. She'll take every possible path bounce off every single tree and water tower and building and ground and everything else that's in between. So the word multipath is a very ambiguous word. You could say it's always there. One thing left to discuss is how much. And so I think what we're really talking about here is a kind of carrier-to-noise ratio or carrier-to-interference ratio. I presume the digital bits of DMR-like audio can tolerate a second or third signal in there as long as it's a certain number of decibels down. I'm going to pick a number of 10 dB. If the other path of audio at some other delay was suppressed by 10 decibels, would that be approximately the threshold, Eric, from your experience, where these artifacts start coming and start disappearing? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the TechNet.
K2RIW, when I first started getting involved with it, I doing some research, I was reading some white papers. And all of this stuff, of course, is all well mapped out, well documented. And TechNet can get you real exact values off the top of my head, I'm not going to do that. So those numbers were important. But I will say for folks who want to know more about how the actual DMR system works and how the TDMO, the time division multiplex, occurs, and how you actually get your time slot, meaning that the repeater's got to synchronize the radio that it's talking to. So really what you got in your hand is the radio that's connected to the computer.
Now, of a slightly similar nature, is digital television, which we are all using now, particularly over-the-air digital television, some of us are using. I remember you quoting a number a couple of weeks ago, where if the offending second signal, the multipath, in digital over-the-air television broadcast, was suppressed by something like 17 decibels, I think was the number, there was no artifacts, no real problem. But with smaller numbers of suppression of the second signal, digital television reception, depending on the quality of your particular equalizer, whether it's a third generation, a seventh generation, or whatever, is of course one of the other big variables. But if I've got the latest generation of equalizer in my digital demodulator of my television over-the-air reception, is 17 dB the approximate number where I do or don't get into grief? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the TechNet.
Well, let's not forget that 17 dB number is approximately the point where things start to happen. But let's not forget that it's a very small window, because we can start to actually bug it a little bit more, and then at some point it stops decoding because it doesn't know where to find sync.
And you and I have discussed in the past the possibility of disciplined oscillators on the receiver end, disciplined oscillators on the broadcast end, such that we give the timing circuitry within the demodulator some extra hints as to how to properly align itself, so to speak, and therefore some of these problems with digital over-the-air broadcast get better. I know that you and I are possibly going to be making an advocacy along these lines, or less you are. KE2EJ, K2RIW, the tech man.
K2RIW, K2EJ. I'm wondering if you're listening to yourself. You're right, John. Yeah, actually, I got to speak to a few people about that. They found it very interesting. There's actually a dialogue that's starting to happen. What's going on. I actually haven't read what the latest is. Some other wacky ideas being introduced, being put into the house. I don't know exactly what it is, but that's kind of a long way from being.
Yes and no. They're both digital circuits. Yes, there's an extra tone in my coming out of my. But we're talking about digital audio, digital video. I think there's somewhat of a relationship here. Anyone have any further questions on DMR before we meet the subject tonight? Give me a call, that is the name right now. K2RIW, the TechNet.
This is
KD2,
CTY. Name is Ed.
KD2CTY, Kilo Delta 2, Charlie Tango Yankee. Go right ahead, Ed. K2RW, the tech man. My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. I was reading about the digital transceivers, and I noticed that with some of the handhelds, that both the regular analog, regular analog HDs, you can have like a Mirage amplifier, and I was reading that it will not work with the digital HD, and I was just wondering why that was. It would seem to me that if you amplify the signal, it wouldn't matter whether it was digital or analog. And that's my question. KD2CTY, clear.
Yeah, that's a darn good question, Ed. I'm going to put in a guess, and I'm going to turn it over to Eric for correction on this. And that is the case of FM transmissions. You can use a Class C amplifier, which in other words, it has extreme compression of amplitude-modulated signals, but frequency-modulated signals pass through beautifully. That's a great technique as long as you're passing one single audio channel, analog, FM modulated. You put more than one signal through that system, or you start going into digital techniques, which have some of the properties of multiple tones being transmitted simultaneously. And now if I put multiple tones through a Class C amplifier, which is giving you amplitude compression, what you get out could be very different. Intermodulation distortion products and so on.
Careful about that.
Okay, we'll soon find out. So, Erica, do I have to worry about AM to AM characteristics? In other words, if I'm getting AM compression in my amplifier that I've added to a DMR radio, could that give me some grief? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the tech man.
All right, first of all, if you've got a DMR radio, if you want to talk about that, you're not hooking an amplifier to it unless it's a very specialized device. The DMR radio from the user end, if it is the repeater end, transmits for 28 milliseconds in a shock. So that amplifier has to go from transmitter to D. Every 28 milliseconds, you get 2 milliseconds to give, 2 milliseconds you get to have your oscillator walk up and get your amplifier by itself before the last percentage you saw. Then at the end of that packet, which is actually at 103 bits of data, followed by sync data, followed by another 103 bits of data, and that's the DMR packet. 146 bits of data, the packet was including synchronized level. But in FM broadcast, don't forget, we not only modulate with our main signal, we also have a subcarrier to give it the stereo. We also have another subcarrier to give it the readout on the screen. We also have another subcarrier, and yet there's interaction here, and that's why you try to make your Class C amplifier have a sort of loop delay if possible amongst other things.
I'm very glad to hear that, sir. Eric, this is important information. So, up till now, any of us could take a base station radio, a handy talkie radio, or whatever, and add an amplifier in order to give it more authority. I'm having the impression that, with rare exception, you cannot add an afterburner on a DMR radio. To your knowledge, Eric, does anybody make an afterburner, an amplifier that you can add to a DMR radio that fulfills all these requirements? Or is that so darn difficult that for the time being, it doesn't exist? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the tech man.
No, it's not impossible. There's commercial devices out there that do it now. They're very expensive. But I'm actually in the process. I just put together a service. Now, to build this, which will take my 4-watt radio, which should make about 6 watts out of it. And if I do it right and it works out right, and other people can do that for themselves, too.
KC2SHO, comment.
KC2SHO, please give us your comment, sir. K2RIW, the tech man.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. There are amplifiers available. And I have, in the car, I have to apologize because I don't have the brand on me right now. I believe it's made in Canada.
I have an amplifier, and I'm using it with the CS700. And it's giving me a very nice, almost mobile-like experience. I keep a 700 on, like a cell phone mount. It goes in a cup holder almost, and that goes back, and it beats the amplifier, and I'm able to operate the local DMR quite regularly like that. It's not a bad experience at all.
I thank you for that information, Jonathan. By your technique, you're able to go up to what power output by what you're using. Over to you, Jonathan.
I haven't measured it to give you an exact of what I'm doing, but I do believe that that amplifier with 5 watts in is 45 out.
No, Dick, most people can't measure the output accurately.
Yeah, there's the next thing to worry about, Eric. Are we talking about mean value, average value, or peak value of power output? I presume a DMR radio, its amplifier final stage, has to have a certain peak power capability and a certain dynamic range capability at that peak power. These are some guesses on my part. Please correct me, Eric. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
Now, there's a couple of different ways to measure it, but it is the simplest method is peak power. If you happen to have a peak reading, one reading, it'll be close. But it actually makes, in the broadcast world, they make something called a broadcast work, which is an average power reading, analog actually. And they make another spark, which is a peak reading spark. But you need the meter, which has more amplifier, a little chemical sample hole in it. And that accurately reads just about any kind of digital sample.
What I'm worried about here, though, Eric, is that there are peaks and there are peaks. I might have a radio system, sophisticated radio system, where the peak, say, for instance, of a radar lasts for 300 or 100 nanoseconds. I worked on a radar where the peak transmit power lasts for 100 nanoseconds. Lots of radars go from 1 to 10 microseconds of peak power transmission. I'm getting the impression that the DMR radio with its 245 bits in 28 milliseconds, that sounds to me like a quarter of a millisecond is the peak amplitude capability. So do we have to be concerned with how fast is the peak responding circuits that sample and hold? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
Now, that's the beauty of this step. It comes in different forms. They make devices that are intended for digital television, and they also make the same sort of device for digital radio, which we have today. Don't forget, most of this stuff was developed for a lot of the cell phones, such as that. You got MDMA, you got CDMA, you got CDMA. So, appropriately, the manufacturers have to make technical decisions for that. The specific methodology is different based upon the type of transmission, but the ultimate real way to go is oil and water.
The 28 millisecond packet-like transmissions of DMR, is that the rate at which the system is switching back and forth between transmit mode and receive mode? As such, you need a very fast TR switch, probably purely solid state, maybe with PIN diodes. Is that one of the major difficulties of adding an afterburner? In other words, the switching rate between transmit, receive, and or amplitude linearity? KE2EJ, K2RIW, the second hand.